Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Krang, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kale Teeter, and Russell Young, discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on LinkedIn.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 495, being recorded on the 30th of May, 2024, with special guests Saqib Rashid. I'm Sujit, and on Teams with me, we have Saqib and myself. It's just the two of us today, and we're going to talk about some interesting work that Saqib's done with one of our partners. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. And I should also mention that Saqib, of course, has been a previous a speaker on the show way back when, right, Saqib? I mean,
it's been a while, yes.
It's been many, many, many years, I would say.
Yeah, it shows the longevity of the show as well. So that's great to see.
Yeah, great. And of course, nice to see that you're still thriving at Microsoft. So that's great. In a different role now, but we'll get to that in just a second. Let me cover a few updates that happened this past week. As you know, Saqib, it was Build this week, so we just did have a few nifty announcements in there. Yeah, I think, you can provide your kind of insights into it, but, you know, there was a lot of Copilot that we heard, right, at Build.
Copilot?
Yeah. I was trying to see whether we'd hit the 100 or the 1,000 count mark for mentioning Copilot, but I think we exceeded that. So it's a Copilot. Our existing Microsoft Copilot, of course, has been enhanced in a number of ways, make it better, but they're kind of injecting Copilot everywhere, right? And given that we're with the Azure, this is like an Azure podcast, I was very impressed with the enhancements they have made for the Copilot in Azure itself, in the portal itself. As you know, we had somebody on the show recently talk about that, how we could, ask a few simple things about my virtual machine, how do I create it, it kind of guides you through it. You can just ask simple questions. And they've enhanced that now quite a bit, right? So they've covered areas like design, right? Yeah, you can ask Copilot, okay, how do I design this particular type of application or use case in Azure? Then operation, how do I actually deploy it? Deploy this AKS cluster for me with this format or something like that. And how do I optimize it, right? Once it's already deployed, how can I kind of improve on the performance or costs? And then, of course, when things go wrong, why is this thing slow, right? Why am I getting errors over there? So, can ask questions like that, and we can expect the Copilot in Azure to respond. So have you ever tried that? Have you tried that feature in the portal?
No, I haven't. But, just general Azure OpenAI things, the things that stuck out to me, there was a session by Mark Rusinovich, and just the appreciation of the scale of the infrastructure investments. That's gigantic. And then in terms of capabilities, I think one that stuck out to me that I wasn't fully aware of, and it's not clear to me if that was there before, if that's a brand new capability, but around fine tuning, because I know with customers and partners that I've worked with, they've taken existing models and tried to fine tune the whole thing. And that can be very expensive and then expensive to run after the fact. But as I understand, the capability now is that you can fine tune on top of base models. And that makes the process faster, cheaper, and easier to run. And I think that's going to be a big game changer for a lot of our, especially industry specific customers and partners.
Yep. Yes. And top of the fine tuning, I think the predominant number of SLMs, small language models that have come out there, right? There's so many of them. In fact, the Phi 3 is Microsoft's SLM, small language model, which has now become very capable. And so, you know, for a number of relatively simple tasks, you don't really need the LLM, right? The LLM is like this gigantic thing, can do it like a million different things, but you only have to do a few things. You can use the SLM locally on your own compute, you know, in Azure. If you like, if you're running on a VM or something, you can just download it and use it locally, or even in any other compute for that matter. So I think you're right. I think that you know, the way that they've enhanced the OpenAI models, there are so many models available. The catalog is growing and growing now. Very impressed to see that.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that jumped out at me at Build was the Fabric announcement. Sorry if I'm stealing your thunder,
No,
but
go ahead.
you know, we are clearly making a lot of investments around Fabric. That is a major approach for us for our data strategy, and just the partnerships that we are announcing, the new capabilities with Snowflake and Iceberg. I think that's a common pattern that I see with a lot of partners, is the usage of Snowflake, and that is just a huge unblocking of pulling in Fabric and the Fabric capabilities, which, you know, there's a bunch of other, I think, very the capabilities that augment and supplement what Snowflake provides, and this is an easier way to onboard that into the ecosystem.
Excellent point. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, I forgot about Snowflake. But you know, kind of also on the OpenAI side, right? Like one of the things they've done is with our Azure database for PostgreSQL, right? You know, that's been pretty popular. I know a lot of my customers are using that. They've added an extension now in there. It's called the Azure underscore AI extension, which you can install inside of your PostgreSQL. And so now inside of your the SQL commands, so the stored procedures, et cetera, that you're using in the database itself, you can now invoke the Azure LLM, right? You can do things like embeddings. Maybe you need to use like a, you know, use embeddings to do more better semantic search within your database. Or you know, you want to call out to an LLM as part of your query to, you know, do some summarization and return put this results into the database or something like that. You can do all that now from inside PostgreSQL itself. So that's a nice enhancement there. And then also with Azure SQL, of course, our own flagship database. This is really cool. You know, so I know you have used you've done a lot of database work, development work, and you know how, you know, writing queries with databases has always been a challenge, right? You're never going to get it right. You know, indexes and joins and unions and whatnot, it gets complex. But now this new feature, you can just ask like, hey, you know, I need to, you know, pull in this data from this table and summarize it with that, and it will generate the SQL query for you, you know, perfectly based on your schema. So I was like, yes, finally I can get my
That's right. That's
SQL
right. Does that mean you have to know, do you have to still remember what left joins are, outer joins, inner joins, et cetera?
Well, so we always have to check the results. So I'm not going to just take the answer and just go with it, right? That's the cardinal rule over here. So always verify everything. So yeah, so you're going to have to know, you know, understand what output was generated and just make sure it makes sense. I think we'll still have a job after this. That's for sure. So that I thought that was a nice little cool feature. And let me see. Yeah, you also already mentioned about the Fabric updates, which is nice, I think. Oh, and then the other one is with the Azure Compute Fleet. This is a new service that's been announced at Build. And this is for deploying, and maybe it's, you know, we can talk about it when we talk about your use case with Backbase. But you know, when you're deploying a huge number of VMs, you know, maybe the VMs are of different types. Some may be Spot, some may not be Spot. You know, you've got networks, and you need to kind of manage all that as one unit, right? That's typically how you're doing. You say, I need one production unit, one QA, one dev, whatever, but it's the same unit, right? And so now this Azure Compute Fleet lets you do that, right? Lets you combine all of these different VMs in different ways, and kind of it just through one API call, it kind of sends the whole thing in, and it kind of deploys it, right? So that's something that's in preview, public preview, and we can all look forward to that.
Yeah, great stuff.
Cool. Well, thanks, Saqib, for all your insights into that. So I wanted to now get back to you know, your let's reintroduce yourself to our listeners. I said, you know, you've been on the show before, but I'm pretty sure your role has changed now. So why don't you reintroduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what you're doing these days, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, thanks for that, Sajid. So yeah, it's funny. It's been actually multiple roles since I was last on the show, so it's been some time. But I'm currently a partner technology strategist out of the GPS org, out of the partner org at Microsoft, and I work exclusively with our global ISVs. So a set of ISVs that we've identified as being very strategic to Microsoft, and specifically I focus on financial services. I've been working with financial services ISVs now for about 7 years, and just a very tremendously fun space. I mean, ISVs in general are a great set of partners to work with, always cutting edge, pushing the limits, working very closely with our engineering and product teams. And so you always get the opportunity to work on new stuff and really push the envelope. And then specifically around financial services, you know, a very regulated industry, but also an industry that has very demanding requirements, low latency for payments, high throughput, clearly high availability and reliability. So you really do have to push the limits of our infrastructure. And just seeing the maturity of our own platform over the last 7 years, I know when I first started having many of these cloud conversations with our financial services partners, we weren't quite sure if our infrastructure could really meet the bar. And that's no longer generally a question now. Now it's just a matter of, you know, can we onboard the workloads fast enough? So it's been a fun 7 years and very, very exciting time to be working with ISVs.
That's great. Yeah. So I know you've been really heads down working with one ISV in particular recently, and that's Backbase. So and I know in my role at in ISC, which is Industry Solutions Engineering, kind of a partner role or a sister role or with where you are. We also had a chance to, you know, work a little bit with Backbase as well. So I am also familiar with that customer. And but I'd like to hear, you know, your perspective on the use case that Backbase brought to you, you know, and how they used Azure in innovative ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if you don't mind, let me give you a little bit of background on Backbase to provide some context and level setting on the solution in particular. So Backbase is an ISV in the fintech space that provides an engagement banking platform. And so what we mean by engagement banking is that is the layer that sits on top of the core banking. So it engages both the end customers, so this would be like the mobile website, as well as mobile app, as well as banking employees. So the actual internal bank employees, CSRs, managers, et cetera, they also use this. And they all use this combined platform for banking needs. And the idea around what Backbase is doing is simplifying that experience and the journeys that typically go with banking. So that's the mission of Backbase. And I've had the fortune to work with them for a few years now. And one of the areas that they had identified as a potential for streamlining was, okay, great, we've built this engagement banking platform, but we're constantly repeating this process of having to integrate with back-end systems. And that's always a custom and bespoke process. I mean, that integration, as we know, is right. Is constantly a challenge, and where a lot of work goes into custom and bespoke work. So how can that be accelerated? Clearly, Backbase and many others in the industry have built up a wealth of knowledge and building these connectors, but it always still remains a very bespoke model. So Backbase came up with this idea of their own iPaaS solution, and the iPaaS solution they call Grand Central. And as part of that Grand Central, they wanted it to be standalone and sit separate from any engagement banking platform, not just the one that Backbase provides, and the backend systems. And so they're evaluating API solutions that could potentially solve the technical requirements of their integration system. And so if you think about the integration layer, there's a couple components to it. You're going to have the actual logic behind it, so the app layer, so to speak, but then you're going to have maybe, for lack of a better word, like a gateway, like something that sits in front of it, the API layer. We work very closely with our engineering team and settled on API management as satisfying that requirement. And specifically, why API management was because API management could scale. It could provide the performance requirements that were needed, but then also some of the NFRs that you'll see in the financial services space. So they needed a certain amount of uptime and a certain amount of throughput. And the other big piece as well is security. So yeah, not only as the Azure platform, but then as Backbase is creating these authentication pieces with backend systems, using whether client credentials, OIDC, or what have you.
Right,
just
right.
Having that flexibility, and that was provided through API management. So it was a really good story.
So let me a couple of clarifying points. You mentioned, I think you said IPaaS earlier. Is that the term that you use?
Yeah, it's integration platform as a service.
As a service. Okay. All right. First time hearing that. That's glad we clarify that for our listeners.
Sure.
And then second, just to confirm, when you say you're integrating with backends, so it's Grand Central that's calling out to backend systems, or are the backend systems also calling back into Grand Central?
Yeah, it could be both ways, but generally it's the other way around. So you'd have the EBP sitting in front calling the backends through Grand Central. And so the backends that we're talking about are banking cores, right? Like the core banking transactional data. It could be CRM systems. It could be payment systems. It could be any other data source.
Got it. Okay. Sounds good. And so continue, you said you were starting to use APIM, and give us some more flavor as to how that happened.
Yeah, that's right. And then just to clarify on the IPaaS thing, because I think one thing that might come up real quick is that on integration is like, oh, wait, doesn't Microsoft have a story around that? And yes, we do have logic apps as an example, or you could build functions. And so that's very true. And so I think there's an opportunity to use logic apps or functions or even container apps, right, for that logic. But you have to still have something that sits in front that gives you the common patterns for accessing the backends. And that's where API management fits in. So that's one, I think, layer to it. The second layer to it was, okay, great. We love API management. It's an excellent solution. Let's dig into it. And now we start getting into very Azure specific SKUs. And so at the time we were looking at this, and mind you, this was about a year plus ago, we sat down with engineering and we're like, yeah, this is great. Let's dig into the SKUs. And the SKUs we have are premium, standard, and basic. Basic, obviously, just for dev purposes, but premium and standard are where you're going to really get your production level requirements and capabilities from. The challenge that we found, though, between standard and premium was that premium provided VNet integration. It provided the necessary SLA for uptime. Standard was lacking there.
Right.
Premium's a lot more expensive.
Way more expensive.
Way more expensive than standard. And so to meet Backbase's commercials and to make this commercially viable for them, and by the way, in their deployment model, they're going to be deploying one set of API management instances per customer, just to create the proper level of isolation. It just wasn't viable. They couldn't make that work. And what we were very fortunate to learn and working closely with engineering, and I think you've had a few PMs from the team, is the V2 SKU of APIM. And so using standard, now you can get zonal redundancy. So you have that higher SLA, that you do have VNet integration, which is really critical if you're thinking about for a financial services company to be able to integrate with these backends to make right. sure that it has that proper end-to-end security. And so I think that was something that we really appreciated from our engineering team, to work closely with them, getting insight into that roadmap, and being able to align on the V2 standard SKU to make that a viable solution for Backbase.
You know, I'm trying to remember, excuse me, I'm trying to remember that, you know, typical uses for APIM, from my recollection, was always for inbound calls, right? You put an APIM to front end your kind of your internal APIs, right? So that you can external customers can authenticate and talk to it in a kind of a managed way. But it looks like you're using it to call out. Am I hearing that correctly? And just explain that flow to me, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you can imagine, so if we look at the end flow, is you have the engagement banking layer, which, by the way, is a SaaS solution. So it's hosted by Backbase in their Azure tenant. Okay. Grand Central is also hosted within Backbase. And so that front end needs to make a call out to the customer's back end systems of record, right?
I see.
And so
I
that's
see.
The integration. And so Grand Central is where it sits in between and creates that repeatable pattern to be able to connect to those back end systems per customer.
So that's why the APIM is actually deployed along with the back end, in the customer's tenant, so to speak. Is that?
It's actually in the Backbase tenant.
I see. But it's one per customer.
That's right. It is one per customer to create the isolation and okay. separation, because the. So I did mention how each integration is bespoke and custom. And so you want to accelerate that. But you still do have certain specific items per customer. Again, authentication protocol,
right.
Maybe other data model items that are specific to them. So you can't really use the same APIM instance across customers.
I see. And those customers are also in Azure. Is that expected?
Not necessarily. So the okay. back end could be on-prem, another cloud, yeah. or Azure. Clearly, with Azure, the integration is a much more seamless and straightforward solution.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So what were some of the other kind of, you mentioned about the SKU, so you were able to overcome that kind of restriction. What were some of the other findings when you did the architecture for this?
Yeah, great question. And so there is the infrastructure side of it, right? But then there is the ops side of the house. And so how do you manage deploying and updating new APIs? And then how do you do this at scale, right? Right?
Because I remember the rules, defining the rules in APM can get quite verbose, right? That those rules files can get pretty complex.
That's right. That's right. And if you're using, let's say, Terraform to deploy, sure, you've deployed the APIM instance, right? The control plane, the gateway, the developer instance. But how do you actually update each API itself, right? That process becomes very difficult using ARM, Terraform, or whatever infrastructure as code. And there are a couple of solutions out there. One of the established ones is called API Ops, which uses a GitOps approach to updating the APIs. And so that was an approach that we evaluated. But Backbase's requirement was unique. One was definitely the scale was huge, because we're talking about potentially hundreds of instances of APIM, and then managing versions across these instances, and then managing, you know, each specific API and set of policies as well. And so the idea is that you didn't want to do like a push model. You wanted to do a pull model on a per customer basis. And what was very interesting and intriguing is using something that we have called Azure Service Operator, which is a Kubernetes-based solution. But the gap there in ASO is ASO, by the way, covers a lot of different existing services. So you can deploy, let's say, I think like storage, VMs, other Kubernetes clusters, all sorts of various services through it. But APM V2 was missing in that. So we were able to work very closely across engineering and Backbase to fill in that gap, to build in those capabilities. And so the way that it works is now you fill out a CRD, a custom resource definition of what you want to have updated, and then it gets deployed to Kubernetes, and then Kubernetes essentially resolves that difference in the deployed APM, and then you can have that pulled on a per APIM instance basis.
I see. And then where are the CRDs? So CRDs are all maintained inside of the etc database in Kubernetes. Is that
That's right.
So that's your definition for your APIs is actually embedded in the CRDs?
That's right. Yeah, you would define all the details within the CRD, and then they're picked up by the Kubernetes operator.
So then I have to ask then, so the Kubernetes operator, are you using like the Cosmos DB version for the etc database? How is that being secured? Because the etc database, you know, is typically not something you manage directly.
Yeah, great question. I'm not sure. I couldn't answer that one. I'm not sure how that is.
I think the from what I remember with the AKS, it's AKS they're using, right? I'm assuming.
Yes.
They have a SKU where they offer higher uptime on the control plane, so the API plane, including the etc database. And I believe in those instances, I think it uses something like Cosmos DB. To actually get the, you know, to store the etc database itself so that it's a little more reliable.
Yeah, that's good information. Yeah.
Great. So you're able to use these two pieces of Azure, the APIM as well as the Azure Service Operator to kind of pull together this solution. Tell me, when it comes to doing it at scale, like deploying these things at scale, what are some of the other, like, how do you do things like troubleshooting? Like, obviously, you know, you've got, like, you know, potentially hundreds of APIMs out there, and there's all these different versions for each customer and whatnot, and, you know, something doesn't work, right? What's the process that you've seen?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think from a practicality standpoint, that's still transparently a little bit TBD. So we'll see that as it starts, you know, scaling out. But certainly a big part of that is the ops component, is the observability component to that, is having that right observability in place. And so we've been working closely with Backbase to ensure that that's in place. And so you have to have the right instrumentation, you have to have the right dashboards to be able to view that and make sure that you have the right alert. So I think, you know, pretty standard across, you know, any other set of services as well, is that to make sure that you have a solution that can scale and keep up, and that's giving you the right instrumentation and view into your services.
Great. This is really great. Thanks for those insights. Yeah, so if you have any kind of last thoughts, tips, tricks you want to leave with our customers, with our listeners as well, please go ahead.
Yeah. I would say that the V2 version of APIM has been a real strong iteration on top of V1, and makes it much more viable for a lot of customers, as you know noted up front as well, is that the cost between premium and standard was always a roadblock that we saw for a lot of our partners and customers, and having a lot of those more premium type capabilities come down to the standard SKU, I think unlocks that for many of our partners and customers. And so if there are any partners, customers that had been reluctant because of cost before, I think you should go back and relook at that, because it is clearly a pretty good offer in the marketplace around capabilities. And now that we have, we're very competitive and from a pricing standpoint, a very viable option for API management.
That's great. Well, Saqib, thanks again for all the insights as usual. It's been great having you back on the show here. And I'm sure we'll see you again sometime.
Yeah, let's not make it 10 plus years again.
That's right, yeah. All right, Saqib.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on LinkedIn. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.
Take care.